Hello, welcome to Measured and Metric, a podcast about engineering, buildings, pits and pipes, the people who built them and the people who use them. My name is Bruce.
My name is Bruce.
And if you didn't catch that reference,
then you need to bone up on your Monty Python.
Welcome back, everyone. We promise not to ever do that again.
But we do hope that you did miss us.
Yeah, it's been a long 6 months.
Yeah, that's one way to say it.
It's been a hazy 6 months. Very blurry 6 months, I will say.
Yeah, I would say that Australians drink.
They definitely lived up to their reputation. That was very fun. So we are back in Canada now because of sad circumstances.
Yes. Unfortunately, yes. We did have to get home to a country where we're, you know, actually citizens because of everything that's happening with COVID-19. We hope that you are all able to stay safe, and we hope that you're able to, you know, heed the warnings. This is, you know, something that I've certainly never experienced in my lifetime. And
yeah, it's definitely been a very scary and uncertain time. And I'm hoping that you guys have had a chance to get back into a routine. Everyone's staying home, and you know, now you've got all the time in the world to listen back to our backlog.
That's right.
So today we're doing an episode on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, which is an episode that we wanted to do because it's obviously in Australia and we got to visit it and it was a lot of fun.
I did enjoy seeing the Harbour Bridge. We walked across it, which is, it's a cars bridge. So walking across a cars bridge is kind of like, oh, there's a sidewalk. Sorry. So there's a sidewalk, but it's a cars bridge, right? It's like you're walking and there's like a barrier. It's cars.
Yeah.
It's a cars bridge.
It's a functional bridge. And I'll get into what all can travel there, but we walked across the regular footpath. You can do actually the skywalk kind of thing where you can walk at the top of the arch, and we did not do that.
No, but we were going to. Why didn't we?
It was super expensive, really windy, and took like 3 hours.
Yeah, the other thing about Australia is that it was cold for like most of the time we were there.
I wouldn't call it cold. I mean, we are Canadians. It definitely wasn't always hot.
Yeah, so like I went expecting it to be, you know, oh yeah, like vacation all the time. But it was like, so when we first showed up, it was sort of the equivalent of their spring. Or not the equivalent, it was Australian spring. And it was like, you know, some days it was down to like 5 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
In
Melbourne.
For the most part,
it got up to at least 20 for most of the time we were there.
Most of the time. But we were there in the summer and it was like 20 to 30. Anyhow.
Australia, it was lovely. Had a great time. Had a lot of fun working on the project there. Really miss my team there. So shout out to you guys. Hope you're listening. Yeah, we'll dive right into this. Oh, also, I want to say that the reason why we're not doing the Sydney Opera House is because my boss told me we can't do it.
Oh, yeah, there's some rivalries there.
But we are doing the Harbour Bridge. So let's start. This is a bridge that connects the Sydney CBD, which...
Central...
Business District.
Central Bush District.
Yeah, so they don't call it downtown there. It's the CBD. So it connects basically the main city central area of Sydney to the North Shore across the Sydney Harbour. It was built in 1932, although the planning started around 1914. It is the seventh largest spanning arch bridge in the world. So not the largest. It's not the longest, but it is the widest and the heaviest.
Oh, wow. Well,
yeah. I mean, I don't know anyone that really likes boasting that.
It's a bridge. I mean, engineers are generally pretty screwy people. So
the single span is about 504 meters. It's highest at 134 meters above sea level. But because of the change in temperature, the heat can actually cause the steel to expand by 18 centimeters in height. So that's pretty good, like, kind of 1.5 rulers, right?
18 centimeters? A ruler's 30 centimeters.
like a standard school ruler is like 12 centimeters.
12 inches.
Oops.
So yeah, so 30 centimeters is roughly 1 foot.
Right.
So 18, yeah, no, it's good. It's still quite a bit if you think about it.
Yeah. It has four pylons, two pylons on each side, four pylons in total. Pylons are what they call basically the towers.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
They're faced with granite. They're completely for show. So back when this design was proposed, people didn't believe that the arches themselves would be structurally strong enough to hold up a bridge for that long.
Okay.
So they included these towers to make it seem like there's more like strong concrete anchors on either side to provide structural integrity.
Okay. But, so like a placebo?
Yeah, they don't do anything.
Wow.
And so the thing I've learned from researching this episode is that there's a lot of things that they've done in terms of aesthetics around bridges to make it seem safer than it is.
Wow.
Well, not, sorry, I shouldn't say that. Not to make it seem safer than it is, but to make people think that it's safer than they feel.
Right. So to appease our
anxiety about
it. Yeah. Yes. Interesting. And also, you know, in defense of anxious people, I mean, we've all seen some bridges fall.
Sure.
It's not like bridges never fall. So if I go out on a bridge and it's just like a straight line across, right? I want to see some stuff. I want to, yeah. For me, I've seen a bridge fall. I want to see some.
But if you knew that those things don't contribute to making it stronger.
But I wouldn't know that those things don't contribute to making it stronger.
And the next time you cross a bridge, you're going to be wondering.
Well, now that's the consequence of this podcast, by the way. Now you're all cursed. You shouldn't have listened. Now you're always going to be looking at something and you're going to be saying, is this for the bridge or is this for me?
It's the close button on an elevator.
No, those work.
Okay.
They don't work everywhere, but Toronto and Melbourne, those buttons work.
All right. So four pylons in total. Like I said, they serve no real structural purpose, but they are useful now. So there's museums in there. We did climb up one of them and you can get onto the top and have a lookout, beautiful view of Sydney.
Yeah.
For the most part, they're just kind of there for museum and I think storage.
Probably.
The bridge itself is kind of its own highway. The Bradfield Highway is about 2.4 kilometers long. It's one of the shortest highways in Australia.
Okay.
Really tiny.
Yeah.
It has six lanes. Plus two more lanes that were originally tram lines.
Okay.
And then it also has train lines, a bike path, and a footpath. It costs $6.25 million Australian dollars.
Okay.
Which is $13.5 million today.
Ooh.
Which is pretty cheap for like a fancy looking pretty bridge.
Okay. I accept that. You know, it is a good looking bridge for... Like, if we were able to build that bridge for $13 million today, then that's probably a good deal. I don't know what bridges cost. But Vivian is telling me that it's a good deal. So
it was paid off finally in 1988. So it was built in 1932, finally paid off by 1988. Uh-huh. So good deal or not, that was a long mortgage.
Yeah, but it's a city mortgage.
That's right.
Yeah.
It is tolled. At $3 Australian.
Okay, I was waiting for you to finish that. It is told that the bridge is
oh, sorry. No, there's
haunted.
A toll on it.
Okay, so there's a toll. They charge you to cross the bridge.
Right, and the toll was mostly used to help pay it off until 1988, which is why it took so long, because it was only $3.
Cool.
And now it's used to fund the future Sydney Harbour Tunnel.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. Annual maintenance cost is $5 million.
Okay, so it costs... All right.
Yeah, it costs more than a third of its original cost to maintain per year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that is lovely.
And more than 150,000 vehicles cross it every day.
Every day. Okay. That's a good stat. What is like a, do you have any like comparable numbers for like how many cross the Brooklyn Bridge? Can you remember?
I can look that up.
No, it doesn't matter. The Sydney Harbour Bridge is a good bridge. That's what we're trying to get across.
It is really fundamental in the expansion of Sydney, right?
Right.
It connected the main central business area with one of the largest suburbs of Sydney.
Cool.
It's the entire other half. So there's a lot of traffic that moves through. 150,000 cars each day, but also people taking transit, people on foot. So
right.
It was a very important link.
Cool.
The pylons I mentioned before were faced with granite. So they weren't completely solid granite, but they had the face of granite.
Okay.
And 250 people relocated from other parts of Australia, from Scotland, from Italy, to the quarry that was just south of Sydney to excavate and mine this granite.
Oh, nice.
And they basically took out the equivalent of 3 of the Louvre pyramids worth of granite.
Okay, so wait a second. The Louvre pyramid.
You remember that big glass thing in front of the Louvre?
Those pyramids? Yeah, but yeah. That was not made out of granite. Okay.
No, but the volume of that.
The
volume. 3 times of that.
Okay. Interesting.
In granite.
Right.
It's 18,000 cubic meter.
Okay.
Which doesn't mean anything, which is
right.
Why I was trying to...
Yeah, I understand. You just confused me for a second.
Sorry.
I'm like, that thing was made out of glass.
Okay.
And then in like my mind, I'm just like, I know that granite is not glass. What is the comparison here?
I'm so glad you asked the important questions, John.
Yeah. Well, you know me.
So those pyramids in front of the Louvre, those famous glass things, take the volume of that times 3. That's how much granite they took out of the ground.
Cool.
To put on the outsides of the pylons.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's a lot of rock.
That's a lot of rock. It's a lot of rock for things that don't actually hold the bridge up.
Yeah, that's right.
So there you go.
Yeah. Your tax dollars at work.
Well, it was really nice researching this episode, actually, because all the information was from Australian sites, and Australians are firmly using the metric system. Mm-hmm. So everything was already in metric.
Oh, nice.
Didn't have to convert anything.
Well, there you go.
So let's get into the history of things. All right, so early plans in 1815 were proposed by a convict.
Of course.
I didn't want to be real cliche about this, but...
But, you know, convicts, people went to Australia because, you know, it's an actual story of convicts going to Australia.
Yes.
So it's, you know...
So noted architect Francis Greenway, all right... He was an English-born architect who was transported to Australia as a convict for forgery. He basically had a fairly okay career. He made some poor financial decisions, and then he tried to forge some financial documents and was sentenced to death.
Oof.
Which would then commute to just a 14 years penal transportation.
Right.
So that's how he ended up in Australia.
Cool.
Still a fairly okay architect, and... Now just in Australia, he worked for the governor of New South Wales as Australia's first government architect.
Huh.
He worked on some of the major churches in Sydney and in New South Wales. He was an architect of some prominence. Maybe they just got a lot of like lowbrow petty thieves.
There was like a thing. So we always think, oh yeah, you know, Australians, we always make the joke. I always make the joke because I have a very edgy sense of humor. You know, oh, they're all just descended from criminals. They're all criminals and stuff. But like some of the crimes that would get you sent to Australia was stuff like, what were some of the silly ones? You like steal a puppy and then you get sent to Australia.
That seems like a pretty bad crime. Anyway. So this was first proposed by Francis Greenway, who, as we all know from stories where I say first proposed, usually didn't actually take it to fruition.
Yeah.
So he just had a great idea, didn't do anything about it. All good. All good.
All good. No drama.
No drama. So it almost actually came into effect in 1900 when a local engineer submitted some designs for a suspension bridge.
Ooh.
Everyone loves a good suspension bridge.
We do.
But then there was an economic downturn and a change of government, and then it never quite started.
Oh.
In 1914, John Bradfield, was appointed the chief engineer of the Sydney Harbour Bridge and Metropolitan Railway construction. So John Bradfield is the name that we will actually attach to this bridge forevermore.
Okay.
His original preference was for a cantilever bridge.
Ooh.
Okay, so I'm going to explain to you what a cantilever bridge is.
Yes.
All right?
Okay.
So imagine if you took a board supported on either side, you would make kind of like a simple H shape, right? Just a board supported on both sides.
Yeah.
That's what you would think of as a regular bridge.
Yeah, yeah. So two supports, a straight board across the middle.
That's right.
The shape of an H.
Now, you can imagine it's fairly easy to snap it in the middle if you put too much weight on something like that.
Right.
It's only kind of supported on both sides with nothing to anchor it, nothing to pull at it.
Yeah.
Okay? No counterbalances or anything. A cantilever divides up the span without adding additional supports in the middle. So it actually lets you have a longer span without having to add like a pier in the middle. And that's important because you want to allow boats and ships to cross under, so you don't want obstructions. And because building a support in a fast river is really hard.
Yeah, right.
So imagine a seesaw. It's basically a board that's supported in the middle, right?
Yeah, okay, aka teeter-totter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It can move and it pivots about that middle point.
And so like it pivots, it rocks.
Yes,
on the middle point, yeah.
What if you sit on one side of that seesaw?
Then the other side raises.
That's right. It sticks up until something as heavy, at least, sits on it.
On the other side.
That's right.
At which point your side lifts.
That's right.
Yeah.
So a cantilever kind of uses this concept. It puts two seesaws, so one on each side.
Okay.
And anchors the outside of those seesaws. So
okay.
Imagine like fat kids sitting on the outside of those seesaws.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So you got two seesaws and there's a gap between these two seesaws, right?
Yeah.
So big weight. So then the edge over the river
is just sticking out.
Sticking up.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now you put a span. So like that board that we put on the original bridge, you put that in the middle on the open ends of those seesaws now.
Yeah. So now you have two seesaws with a big gap in the middle and there's a board sitting across that gap in
That's
the middle.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that board and whatever goes on it has to be at least twice as heavy as each of those fat kids sitting on the outside.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I'm going to let the listeners in on a little secret. So Vivian and I walked over this before. We did have a rare act of preparation.
Because I wasn't sure if I could explain this in words. But basically, you've got a total of four supports. You've got the middle of the two seesaws.
Yep.
And you've got the anchors on the outside.
Yep.
That's holding your seesaws down.
Right.
So that when you put weight and a span in the middle over the main bridge span area, you can put a lot more weight there. And of course, those sides of the seesaw want to lift up naturally. So when you put the weight down, you've got a counterbalance that allows you to basically put more weight down than you would normally.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to worry about the bridge collapsing downwards because the bridge itself is trying to lift.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a cantilever bridge, and that's what was originally proposed. But that's not what ultimately the bridge is.
Right, okay. Oh, okay.
I just wanted to explain that.
Well, you got a freebie, a free explanation of a cantilever bridge.
Well, it is important to say that too, though, right? Because I want you to understand why they went with the ultimate bridge design, which is a single arch bridge design.
Okay, like the Romans.
That's right.
Yeah.
So if you think of an arch in the form of a doorway, right? When you put weight on that arch, that weight gets distributed by the arch, not just downward into the ground, but also outward.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then putting weight on the top of an arch, it's very hard to break an arch by putting weight on the top.
Yes.
Aha.
So you've now divided that force, that downward force, that's naturally gravity, you've divided it now to also a horizontal force at the ends of the arch.
Nice.
Does that make sense? Which means that your abutments are the points where the bridge touched ground, basically. They're the heavy bits at the end that anchor everything down.
Mm-hmm.
Your abutment needs to be able to not just resist the downward force, but the outward force. So
right.
You just need to make sure your abutments are strong enough.
Yeah.
But that is preferable because you actually don't need as much steel to do an arch bridge in that sense, as long as you have enough support in the abutments to
right.
resist that horizontal force. The cantilever bridge, like the seesaw mechanism, we're only talking about up and downs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your weight distribution have all equaled out to up and downs.
Yeah.
Whereas the arch has now dissipated it in some way to the horizontal. Does
gotcha.
That make a bit of sense?
Yeah. 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 That makes sense. I gotcha. I follow.
Okay. So after World War I, Bradfield traveled overseas to study and investigate, and he returned and decided on this arch bridge design based on the Hell's Gate Bridge from New York City.
Okay.
So you'll actually see that it's quite similar, the two of them.
Right.
His justification is that it's cheaper, it's less steel than the cantilever bridge, exactly everything that I just mentioned.
Right.
So in the 1922, the government passed the Sydney Harbour Bridge Act and allowed for the construction of either a cantilever or an arch bridge.
We don't care which. We just want this bridge.
We just want one. I don't know. You decide. The world was invited to bid.
Nice.
Worldwide tenders.
Yeah.
They received 20 proposals from 6 companies.
Okay.
So some companies submitted more than one, including the company that actually won.
Right.
It was ultimately awarded to a British firm called Dorman Long and Company.
Okay.
And it's really interesting, actually. Design Boom, this website, they did a bunch of renderings of 6 of the proposed bridge designs that got rejected.
Right.
And you can see what it could have been. And some of these designs are quite silly. There were ones with a lot of different supports in the river, which is not preferable for all the reasons I said before. It's hard to build, can't take boats across. There was one where like they had a three-way structure with 3 different coasts and this giant weird tower in the middle. It looked very steampunk. There were really ugly cantilever suspension bridge hybrids where they had designed a cantilever bridge like the seesaw mechanism, but then they put extra steel above it in the shape of a suspension bridge so that it looks like a suspension bridge.
Oh, yeah. So Vivian showed some of these to me, and some of them look like real industrial. Like some of them just look like the cheapest. You know, you got those freight train bridges that you like see everywhere going across, and it's like they keep them so far away from the road because they just look terrible. They look like a rusted steel box. And there were like people proposing that for the, oh yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So keep in mind, this bridge is right next to the Opera House. This is one of the most iconic scenes of Sydney.
Of Australia in a lot of ways.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the construction of the underground railways in the CBD also coincided with the construction of this bridge.
Okay.
So they designed the bridge to allow for rail to go over so that they could have that connectivity,
yeah.
Which is smart.
Smart.
Smart. It took 8 years to construct. And Bradfield, our hero engineer, he visited kind of sporadically, but basically once he had handed over the design and the reins to Dorman Long and Company, he just didn't really get involved anymore.
Okay.
So the way that the contract worked was basically Bradfield had an idea, like a conceptual design for the bridge.
Yeah.
But the firm that won would design and build it. Like final design and build it.
So like he gave like a rendering.
Yeah. He gave a rough idea.
I know this type of guy. He's the visionary.
That's right. But he tried to take credit.
Of course he did. He's the visionary.
which turned into this massive argument.
Yeah.
And do you remember when we were crossing the bridge, there was that big like iron plaque on the side of the pylon, and it was really complicated. It was like Bradfield was in charge of this and was the chief engineer, and Dorman Long and company did this part. Like, it was just this like long, rambly.
Yeah, I didn't read it. That's how long, like, I'm the guy who reads like a sign on the door.
That's true.
And I saw this and I'm just like, ugh.
It was this long, rambly thing about who built what, and I didn't understand it at the time. So that came about because Bradfield tried to take credit for the design.
Beautiful.
And this is how they rectified it. Just stick this like a giant disclaimer on the side of the pylon.
Nice. Well, that's fun.
Yeah. So that's how it got built.
Huh.
You know, convicts and...
Yeah.
Not the most unsavory characters we've had.
No, like I don't want to, you know, forgery is not as bad as murder.
Okay.
I'm comfortable making that judgment. You know, I just what are you in for? I killed somebody. What are you in for? Oh, I forged some documents to make myself look a little bit less poor. All right, who's worse there?
It's true. It was built only in 8 years, which I think is surprisingly quick for the time. If you actually do look into the construction of the Opera House itself, you know, being a very comparable time of when it was built and a very comparable location, it was a much more fraught history of how long it took to build.
And
it was kind of a story of like how not to manage a construction site.
Man, the episode that we could have done on the Sydney Opera House, let me tell you.
Yeah, no, I took a lot of pictures of the concrete.
Yeah, does your boss even subscribe to this podcast?
He's definitely listening.
All right. Hi.
Hi, David.
We respect your request.
Anyway, so let's get into actually how they built some of this. I mentioned that this bridge was kind of a template out of the New York City Hell's Gate Bridge.
Yep.
Well, in New York City, they built their pylon right next to the arches so that it looks like the steel from the arches actually go into the pylons.
Oh, I like that.
Well, it reinforces this idea that the pylons do anything.
Yeah.
But here, they actually don't. So the Sydney Harbour Bridge, I have an image here that just shows a sizable gap between the arches and the pylons so that you actually see that the pylons don't do anything.
That is actually kind of garbage. We're going to load this image onto our website. If I can get the website working again, I have to do something. I don't remember how to do it. But we will. Social media, at the very least, probably our website. And you're going to look at this picture and you're going to be like, oh, they should have seen that. For now, just close your eyes and imagine something that really obviously looks wrong.
But this is the right one.
I know.
It doesn't. The pylons don't do anything.
No, but the pylons are there to make you feel better. And it's like, it's, what is it like? It's like something.
Well done. The arches are intentionally designed to be, they're supposed to terminate a few meters from the pylon to show that the structural load is transferred through the bottom hinge, not the pylons.
Right.
It goes through the abutments at the bottom.
Right.
So this is a more true picture of the loads.
Gotcha.
So the Hell's Gate Bridge does get criticized for this illusion.
Yes.
That the pylons are connected to the steel.
Well, you know, yeah, okay, fine.
So that's one of the nice things about this bridge.
It's an honest bridge.
It's a sort of honest bridge. They still had the pylons.
They had the pylons, but they're not like lying All right.
They're not lying pylons. This is all right. So the construction of this bridge, because the arches were actually constructed from either side, there were cranes that crawled along the arch, kind of building ahead of itself.
Nice.
And then moving forward.
Yeah.
So you can imagine the two halves kind of dangling out over.
Yeah.
And they were held back by cables so that they wouldn't, you know, as they get further and further out, they wouldn't just fall into the river.
Collapse. But you're building the bridge as you cross the bridge.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there was finally a moment where the two ends would meet right in the middle.
Yeah.
And they didn't know, right? Like, you don't know if it's going to line up. You've been building these two bridges from either side. Had to make sure that it's just like a moment of faith, moment of truth.
Yeah.
And then you release the cables and then the two should fall perfectly in line with each other. And they did. And workers quickly went in and bolted it together.
Yeah.
And it supported itself for the first time.
Yeah. And so what... At this point, actually, this is a really interesting story that I learned in the museum. So they actually took the designers and they made them stand at the very top of the bridge. And then they said, okay, so we're going to let these cables go. And if these bridges meet, then you're good.
if not, then
into the river you go.
That did not happen.
So it was different. Australia back then was like very Wild West kind of a thing.
That's not true. What is true, though... I don't know, John, if you remember this, but there's a plate. There's a big steel plate. It's kind of the key that held the two ends of the arch together. And it's right at the apex of that arch.
Yeah.
And that was the kind of like capstone, right? Like if you imagine a Roman arch, it has a capstone.
Mm-hmm.
This was the capstone in the arch, and they did a replica of that that was in the museum in one of the pylons. And
yes.
You could see just the intricacies of that, what it looked like, and it's really cool. And when we were walking along, I kept trying to like look up and point out.
Yeah, to look up and see it.
You can't.
Yeah, and it was pretty amazing because it was sort of described as like that was like the most important piece of this entire bridge. And it was bigger. Like I wouldn't have been able to lift it myself, but it was small, right? Like it was like big compared to me in the context of lifting it, but it was small in the context of this whole bridge. It was pretty amazing.
When they released it, they were very close. I think they were within like 2 centimeters of each other. Like they were just amazing.
Yeah.
And by the time you kind of put the key in place, bolt it together, kind of make everything rigid, then you've aligned everything.
Yeah. You done good.
Yeah. One more thing to really just reinforce that these pylons are for no good whatsoever. They were built last. So after they built the arches, they built the bridge deck.
Right.
They built the rest of the bridge. And then they went back and put these towers up.
Oh, nice. Awful decent.
Fundamentally, not for any reason structurally.
Yeah. I love it.
During construction... 16 workers died.
Oof, okay.
Not the greatest numbers, but also not the worst for the time. Considering
there were 250 people...
Just working on the granite.
Just in the quarry.
Ooh. Yeah.
So they had a lot of workers on this bridge. 16.
16 died. Yeah. Only two from falling off the bridge.
Only two.
Only... Well...
Like I said, though, this is kind of the Wild West. Like, you know, two died from falling off the bridge... Two died from getting into duels on the bridge. You know, pistols at dawn.
Okay.
Yeah. Six died from alcohol poisoning, whatever. I don't know. I'm not making jokes.
Yeah.
We're going to get...
Liver cirrhosis.
Yeah, we're going to get censored for this one, I tell you. But 16 workers does still kind of suck. Like, if you had 16 workers dying on a construction project today...
Oh, for sure.
Right? It's unacceptable, I think...
And that's the death rate, right? A lot more were injured because of unsafe conditions.
Yeah.
So back then they didn't have real bolts. Like they were using rivets.
Yeah.
Do you remember rivets? Like very World War II kind of thing. And
that's why the Titanic sank. It's not. Don't listen to that. But whatever. Rivets. Blech.
Okay. The point of a rivet. John, you know how they work?
Yeah. Yeah. So a rivet is like a hollow tube with a cap on it. And so then you... put it through, it goes through the hole and then it pulls back and you kind of squish this tube so that you wind up with something that is kind of like a mushroom cap on the top and kind of a mushroom cap on the bottom. And so it's designed to give you like a very tight fit, and it's a one-way thing. Like once the rivet goes in, it's very hard to remove that rivet.
Yeah, so it's not like a nut and bolt, right? A nut and bolt, you can like, you have threads and you can unscrew it.
Yeah.
Whereas a rivet is like, you've got a joint, you basically punch like a tube, and then you just hammer either side until it's flat.
Yeah.
So then it's completely sealed. But that action of making that mushroom cap is using a machinery that's just really loud. And so a lot of the workers suffered from deafness from doing that repetitively at close proximity.
Yeah. Not good.
Yeah. So that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I mean, I've already explained the action of how the bridge works. So the arch on the bottom mainly supports most of the weight.
Okay.
And that's the part that's anchored to the abutments on both sides of the river.
Mm-hmm.
The arch on the top adds rigidity, because if you can imagine a bridge, like just a single arch, if it gets load on it, it compresses, right? So like you're pushing down on it, it makes it squish in because it's flexed up.
Yeah.
When it squishes in, if it fails, right, it would buckle inward.
Yep.
And then fall. That's how the failure would happen.
Okay.
And that top arch adds rigidity so that it lifts up and resists against that crushing action.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you've added now a bunch of triangles up to the top arch.
And yeah.
It just keeps it from buckling in on itself.
Oh, gotta love those triangles.
That's right.
Yep.
So that's how the arch bridge works.
Cool.
This is another very Aussie story that I quite love. During the opening, the New South Wales Premier at the time was supposed to open it and cut the ribbon.
Yeah.
And now we know how important it is for like a ribbon cutting ceremony on something like this, right?
Yeah, it's a bridge. You got to have that ribbon, you got to snip it with the oversized scissors.
And you're the premier, right?
Yeah.
This thing has been 8 years in the building. It probably was even not your idea.
Yeah.
But you get to now take full credit for it.
Of course.
By cutting the ribbon.
Yeah.
So Francis de Groot was a member of the fascist anti-Lang party. He just rode up on horseback, charged, and slashed the ribbon with sword.
Of course.
Just
of
came across and was like, nope. Not yeah. happening.
A fascist premier. God bless.
Yeah. Not on my watch. So he came across, slashed this thing before the premier
yeah.
could actually get to it.
Oh, so he was not the premier.
No, he just came and ruined the party.
Just some guy. Okay. I was going to say, like, I find it real hard to believe that they would elect a fascist in a...
No. So the New South Wales premier at the time had the big scissors ready.
He had
ready.
The big scissors ready, and some dude on a horse...
with a
fascist,
sword.
Some fascist on a horse with a sword slashed the ribbon, he said.
Rode away.
No slash for you.
Yeah.
And off he goes.
Isn't that hilarious? I can only imagine that happening.
That is
in
actually
Australia.
Pretty funny, yeah.
So anyway, he was arrested.
Okay.
And then they just held the ribbon in place while the premier cut it. They just held it up.
That's really cute. Sorry, we don't have to stop the party, you guys. It's fine. Here you go. Oh, man.
Yeah. So the bridge itself also had a few nicknames. It's called the coat hanger.
Okay.
Because it looks like a coat hanger.
Sure.
Right? It's got that kind of nice wide arch.
Yep.
Nice coat hanger. It was also kind of called the iron lung because it kept a lot of Depression era workers employed.
Okay.
So it was just kind of keeping the economy on life support.
Yeah.
But after the bridge was finished, a lot of the workers were out of work and had to wait till World War II before they even found work in their field again.
Mm.
So before the bridge was constructed, you used to have to cross the harbor by ferry.
Right.
In 1927, the peak ferry usage was 47 million passengers annually.
Wow.
And after the opening of the bridge, it was only 20 million passengers annually.
Oh, and so cut it in better than half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the ferry is still operational today. Like, we took it.
Yes. Yes, we did.
Remember that? Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's quite nice. It's a nice way to see Sydney, walk across the bridge, and then take the ferry back.
Yeah. So the ferry was just part of, like, the public transit. It wasn't like a special trip or anything like that. It was just like, we wanted to go from here to here. And Sydney also, they have this really cool feature where you just tap your credit card on the bus and it charges you your fare. And it's great. What is so hard about that? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, this is going to be another rant, but yes.
Yes.
So the bridge holds pretty much everything. Cars, trains, pedestrians, cyclists. Mm-hmm. I could only find daily traffic counts from 2010, but at the time it took 160,000 vehicles, 1,650 bicycles.
Okay.
And 204 trains every day.
Nice.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Thing is, like, coming up to 100 years old. So.
Yeah. Pretty
not
decent.
Bad. Considering, remember the Brooklyn Bridge, like, they've already stopped trucks from going over and there's no trains going over it anymore.
Yeah.
Things falling apart.
Yeah. Cut it down pretty good.
And it's about the same age, roughly.
Yeah.
Maybe a little older.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of land acquisition for the construction of the approaches on both sides of the bridge, which meant a lot of the development of those neighborhoods got to be reconstructed, and they redid the whole thing to center around the highways and the bridge.
Nice.
So that whole kind of Harbor City area was just rebuilt.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, but they demolished 470 homes and commercial buildings on the North Shore.
Whoa.
With little to no compensation.
Right.
So quite a time.
Yeah. This business has been closed by the order of the bridge need.
The maintenance on the bridge itself, the steelwork basically needs to be painted frequently.
Okay.
To protect against corrosion.
Yeah.
Every time they paint it, it requires some 30,000 liters of paint.
Okay.
And it's covering the surface area that's equivalent to 60 football fields.
Nice. Pretty good. And so is it like the Golden Gate Bridge where by the time they've finished painting one side, they've already started again on the other?
No, I don't think they do it kind of like continuously. I think they do it just on a schedule as they need it.
Right.
It is a cultural icon. It is on the Australian National Heritage List.
Ooh.
And the New South Wales Heritage Register.
Cool.
Not on any UNESCO or any like global site.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of bridges that you could talk about before the Sydney Harbour Bridge.
I don't know. It was a nice bridge.
It's a good bridge. I'm not trying to trash it, but I'm just saying, like, if I was in, where's UNESCO headquartered? I'm just saying it wouldn't really register. It's an okay bridge. It was good. I'm glad that I walked it.
I think it's a nice bridge. I'm going to close with what Bill Bryson said about it, all right?
Okay.
You can see it from every corner of the city, creeping into frame from the oddest angles, like an uncle trying to get into every snapshot. Which I think is one of the nicest quotes about the coat hanger.
Nice.
Yeah, that's our episode on the Harbour Bridge. Nice to be back.
It is very nice to be back.
I did love Australia. Thank you so much for having me in Melbourne. Really enjoyed working with people there. Had a great time.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really positive experience. You know, it was cool. It was really nice just to be able to go to such a different, like, Australia and Canada are tremendously compatible in a lot of ways, but there's still like a very different feeling. There's a whole different like vibe in Australia that was interesting to try and get into, you know?
It was super laid back, and I wouldn't say it's the Wild West, but they definitely allowed me to flex a bit as an engineer. Does that make sense? I was able to kind of go back to first principles on a lot of things. I was able to just problem solve, and I think just the nature of the project I was working on, it was very much, let's just get this built. You know, I didn't have to deal with a lot of the politics, which was just fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah.
It was great. And I wish everyone luck on the guys that are finishing up the project and hope to be able to visit again someday.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sticking with us on this first episode of season 2.
Yeah, we're back in full force. We have our new recording setup, which I must say is far more comfortable. I hope that it sounds good.
It allows us to record from the couch, which is ace.
Yes. Thanks, as always, to Astronomic Audio for editing and sound design. You know, at least 90% of how good this podcast sounds is entirely down to Alex, because I'm just sitting here on a couch and I'm moving my head a lot.
Yes. And we are on social media. I'm giving up on Twitter, guys, because I can't.
Yeah.
Nobody follows us on Twitter anyway. It's fine. So follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We're at Measure to Metric. And we do have our website, hopefully up and running by the time this is on air.
It'll definitely be up and running by the time this is on air.
We've got some exciting episodes lined up for the next little while everyone's in quarantine.
Yes.
We're going to be doing a few jailbreak episodes.
Ooh.
Just to help you guys resist that cabin fever.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I'm excited for season 2.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Music is actually by John. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that.
I don't know that we have ever mentioned that. I do all of the music for this. If you enjoy the music for this, I do have a band camp. We'll link to it on the website.
Yeah.
And we'll maybe put out something on our social media. There's a URL that you can visit. Anyhow.
Thank you so much for sticking with us. Glad to be back in Canada. And as always, remember to measure in metric.
Do it. Footpat.
Sorry, our accent is totally mixed up. I was working with a mix of Irish and Australian people, and I really did not pick up either and just mixed up both.
Yeah. And I'm just being deliberately offensive. So
great.